There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
You say you want a revolution. Well, you know, we all want to change the world.
We are talking about a revolution this morning on The Business Breakfast, in particular a shopping revolution, because that is the title of a new book by Wharton marketing professor Barbara Khan. She's in Dubai and in the Dubai Eye studio. Good morning, Professor Khan. Thank you for joining us.
Great to be here.
You're here in Dubai to talk at the Retail Leaders Circle Forum, which is happening this week. And you're going to be talking about, among other things, your new book, The Shopping Revolution, How Successful Retailers Win Customers in an Era of Endless Disruption. This industry has been disrupted for the past 20 years since Amazon started. What's new?
Yeah, in the U.S., the shopping experience has changed radically. So a lot of the trends that are different is it's become an omni-shopping experience, which means people shop online, they use their mobile phone, and they shop in physical stores, and they expect a seamless integration among all three of those channels. It's not one or the other. It's everything, omni. And that's really changed behavior significantly.
You talk about some winners in particular in this revolution. Amazon, of course, is one of them, but it's not the only one. You say Walmart, for example, in grocery has been a winner, and that's very much an old school retailer. How did an old school retailer remain so successful?
Yeah, well, Walmart is the number one retailer in the U.S., so they're much bigger than Amazon, although Amazon's bigger online. And what Walmart has done is they've had to pivot and embrace this new customer shopping experience. And so they purchased Jet.com for $3.3 billion, I think it was. And that gave them access to an online community also, and to online talent, because thinking in the online marketplace is very different than the physical marketplace. And so Walmart is trying to be omnichannel by starting and leveraging their store advantages, and then leveraging that to go to the online business as well. So they're coming at it from a different angle.
It's interesting you talk about grocery retail. We were talking here about, I don't know, 2 months ago with the new chief executive of a company called Spinneys. It's a upmarket supermarket chain here. And he'd worked previously at Walmart. He'd worked at Waitrose in the UK, John Lewis, a very experienced retailer, a guy called Matthew Frost. And we asked him, are you going to introduce online grocery for Spinneys? And he basically said no. He said, because there's nowhere in the world really that you can make online grocery work. The logistics, right, keeping the eggs at one temperature, the milk at another, the ice cream at another, the bananas at another, and so on, are so expensive that it's just prohibitive. What would you say to him if he was here?
No, that is true. And one of the things that's made grocery very difficult, but by the way, very important to figure out how to make it work, is that it's the last mile they talk about. Not just what you're talking about, the perishability of the inventory, that's difficult and needs expertise. But also, if you're going to deliver, if you're going to shop online, you need to deliver those groceries to the end user. And that last mile delivering to the person's home instead of to a distribution center is very, very expensive. And so that's a lot of what all of these winners in the retail environment are trying to figure out. So, for example, Walmart is figuring it out by having the consumer themselves do the last mile. You want to shop online because it's more convenient, but then pick it up in the store or pick it up at the curbside. And so by doing that, they get the consumer to drive that last mile. There's some people that are thinking about different ways, driverless cars or drones maybe, to deliver the last mile. But that last mile is very, very expensive.
But even if we were going to do grocery with click and collect, as we sometimes call it. I mean, I bought some electronics in London a couple of weeks ago and picked it up at the Whole Foods store there, which is owned by Amazon. That works fine for electronics, but if I'd ordered a range of groceries, they couldn't all have been in the one cupboard waiting for me all day, because...
But that's the logistics, and you're absolutely right. That's much trickier, but that is what people are trying to work out. And let me just argue another reason why grocery is so important, because in this omni-channel experience, it's a 24/7 kind of shopping experience in the consumer's mind, and their frequency matters. So if you want to learn a lot about your customer so you can do a more personalized shopping experience, which people are starting to expect, you have to interact with them more. And grocery, people interact 2-3 times a week. So that's a really important source of data.
Speaking of groceries, I went to the Amazon Go store in Seattle the week before last and thoroughly enjoyed the experience. But there were more staff than there were sort of shoppers in there, simply there to tell people how to do it, how to get the app, how to actually work it. I suppose it'll be something we'll look back on in a year or two's time and laugh that we were so innocent. But how fast before that sort of concept rolls out across the country and the world?
See, now what's very interesting about Amazon Go and all Amazon stores when they started the bookstore too. Amazon Go is just taking it a step further, is trying to teach the consumer to use their mobile phone. So what happens as soon as you walk into Amazon Go, you tap into your phone. Now you're on your app. Now you can connect all the data. So you can imagine everything that I know that I've shopped online is now connected. When I'm in the store, every single move you do is made through cameras and sensors. And that makes it convenient because then you can just walk out. And that's what they have to instruct the consumers. They're afraid to walk out without paying.
The interesting thing for me was that the fact that although I didn't have a Wi-Fi signal in Seattle, I didn't have a registered phone service, the store's Wi-Fi was what provided the interaction between me and the store.
Right. You know, and it, by the way, just this is an aside, but if you've been following the news about Facebook and stuff like this, the idea that what I'm talking about is connecting every single thing you do in the store with everything that's on your phone, with everything that's online shopping, has some people a little scared, you know, because that just happened with fake news or whatever's going on with Facebook.
Is the suggestion then that I'm sharing what's on my phone with Amazon when I walk into that store?
Yes.
How much are they taking from me?
Pretty much everything, you know. Right now, the data's there. And if you sign into the app, the exchange that you're making with Amazon is, first of all, that you trust them. So that's very important. A retailer trust is important. And second of all, that they will use that data to optimize your shopping experience. Mm. That'll be beneficial to you.
What data are they going to take from me apart from my credit card details?
Well, your shopping experience. So, for example, if they know that you like a certain kind of cheese when you walk into the store, they may tell you, we have that cheese on sale, you know, or we have a special edition of that cheese.
I spent $40-something on food stuffs there. And
we didn't see any of it.
Yes, you did. I bought you chocolates last week. $30 was on chocolate. So they're going to have me down as a chocolate person,
yeah. Right.
Bernard writes in saying, Gibson's here in Dubai is excellent. Thank you very much indeed. So we do have some online grocery retailing here, no question at all. Talk to me about glasses. One of the case studies that you have in your book is Warby Parker. You ask the question, how did Warby Parker make a dent in the once untouchable Luxottica's lucrative eyewear business?
Yeah, Warby is our special team because they're all Wharton MBA students and they started the business very recently, within the last 10 years.
Adam Grant, your colleague, famously didn't invest in them.
Oh, right. Several of us didn't invest in them. We're still professors. But no, what their idea was is Luxottica owns, even though people don't know it because they go under lots of different brands, they owned a very large proportion of the eyewear business. And as a result of that,
Ray-Ban and Oakley.
All of those, they're all Luxottica, actually. Many, they own their own brands. They own eye stores. They own the licenses to a lot of luxury stores. So a lot of the eyewear business was managed by Luxottica. And one of the things that happened there is that there's a lot of margin then. So to make the glasses wasn't that expensive, but then they would be sold for like $300, $400. So what the founders of Warby decided was if they could eliminate some of the layers, some of the retail layers, and go direct to the end user, they could reduce that margin and sell very high-quality, fashionable glasses at a cheaper price. The problem was 98% of buying eyeglasses was done in the physical store, and consumers didn't know how to buy glasses online. It turns out that consumers are kind of, I don't want to say ignorant, let's use the word ignorant, about buying glasses. Like, everybody thinks that someone else knows how to buy glasses when they don't know how to do it. Like, what glasses fit on your face or things like that. No one knows how to do that. And so when you go into an eyeglass store, a lot of the sales associate's job is to kind of convince you those glasses look good on you. How do you do that online? So a really big innovation that Warby Parker had was called the Home Try-On Kit. And they gave you 5 frames for 5 days for free. And they were empty frames, not with your prescription. And you could order 5 frames, try them on, take pictures, put them on social media, ask your friends, and kind of simulate the store experience, but at home. And that turned out to work really beautifully. And it had other implications that they didn't even anticipate at the time, which is viral marketing. Everybody was putting pictures of themselves with glasses on their, you know, so everybody found out about Warby. Or if you had your glasses delivered to work, you try them on in the office, and everybody would. So the word of mouth spread really fast.
We're talking retail now. Barbara Kahn is Professor of Marketing at the Wharton School. She's in Dubai for the Retail Leaders Circle event that's happening this week. She is described as one of the world's most prominent scholars in retail and marketing. 75 articles and a number of books, including her upcoming title, The Shopping Revolution. Barbara, thank you very much indeed for staying with us.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here.
Loads of questions coming in. Retail, such a big part of life here in Dubai in particular. Hey Barbara, says Mukadeem, do you think the brick and mortar store will die out within our lifetime?
Absolutely not. I think shopping shopping behavior is going to change, but there's always going to be a need for touch and feel, for immediacy. You forget Christmas Eve to buy your Christmas gifts. You got to run to the store. You can't get it online. So there's always that need.
You say that, but we've seen so many Macy's closures announced. We've seen Toys R Us, obviously, going bust in the UK and the US. Where are you seeing the touch and feel if these places can't keep their doors open?
But see, that's the point. You have to rethink about it strategically. Touch and feel is the most expensive part of retailing, so you have to figure out where does that matter and what can you efficiently do online. And it's the really strategic, thoughtful retailers that understand what should be done in the physical store, what can you do more efficiently online.
In Seattle, all over the place, there were Amazon, Orange Amazon vans, trucks with delivery within 1 hour on the side, which I guess means that you can do things at short notice, particularly on Christmas Eve.
Not on Christmas Eve, though.
Not on Christmas Eve. But on the other hand, if people are not going out to the shops, if people are actually taking home delivery, what does it mean for not just for retail, but for other things like public transport, for all of the other amenities that a city would put on to accommodate those people walking or travelling to and from shops?
Yeah, you're right. It really changes the entire consumer person experience. But I don't think it means that people are going to sit in their home in a cocoon for the rest of their life and get everything virtual. You know, there's a need to go out. You just have to figure out what can you do more efficiently. So one of the things a lot of people are talking about is the IoT, Internet of Things, you know, where your refrigerator is going to order the butter directly without you being involved when you run out of butter. And so fine, let the refrigerator do that. But you know, there's some things that you might want to do, and that's what we have to think about. What is life about? What's the quality of life? What should be experiential?
Well, I'm going to watch my fridge because I don't want it ordering things to improve its quality of life and not mine.
One of the online retailers that you talk about as being an example of a luxury retailer that gets it right online, because you don't have that touch point online, is Yoox Net-a-Porter. Right. And that's interesting because a year or two ago, Mohamed Alabar, a very prominent business person here, bought a big stake in Yoox Net-a-Porter. So it's kind of almost a local business now. What do they do differently than other luxury retailers, and how can they apply that here?
Well, what's really interesting about Yoox Net-a-Porter and then Farfetch, which is another one that's doing really well, is most of the luxury retailers and luxury brands were very reluctant to embrace online, because luxury is about high touch. Luxury is about person one-to-one. And so they were really slow to understand how online was going to change shopping behavior. And Net-a-Porter understood it much earlier. Now, they started out as a content platform, so they were giving you information about luxury, and then you could buy through Net-a-Porter. Farfetch is another e-commerce platform that's more of a storefront or marketplace, so they don't hold inventory. Net-a-Porter does. And a lot of the luxury retailers are trying to figure out what's their position. So I believe Chanel, for example, bought a position in Farfetch. Other retailers, luxury retailers, are understanding the importance of Net-a-Porter and partnering with them.
Well, the big stores, but it's also, I mean, in the States recently suffering. Toys R Us, of course, most recently. American Apparel, Bonton, Claire's,
yeah,
Foot Locker, J. Crew, Radio Shack. And then, of course, there are other big stores, the JCPenney's of the world, Macy's, Nordstrom, Sears, struggling to understand how this works. Is it just that they are struggling to understand, or is it the fact that so many people are moving away from these stores that they are no longer sustainable?
Yeah, well, I mean, Toys R Us is a perfect example of a store that didn't get it. Why would you go to Toys R Us? You can buy toys much more efficiently online. And if you went into the Toys R Us store, it wasn't a nice experience. You didn't want to go there and wait online. There was nothing. Like the Dubai Mall, for example, that draws you in because it's experiential. Toys R Us was nothing like that.
Well, obviously, jewelry, scents, etc., where there's a sort of personal sort of appreciation, something sensory about it, you maybe need to go and experience it. But for things that are like toys, are exactly what you see in the adverts, electronics. Maybe those things will be almost exclusively online.
Some of them will, but toys are an example of something that could be very experiential. You could have your kids play, you know, you can have them interact with there's things you can do. Or with electronics, when you're trying to upgrade people, a lot of people are afraid, they're electronics phobic, and they want someone to walk them through or talk them through how to use it. So that's my point. You have to figure out where the high touch experience has to be and what can be more efficiently done online. And the smart retailers definitely get that.
We've been talking about the last mile as being the expensive bit of online, but what about returns? What are companies doing to try and cut that down? Because that's not cheap.
Yes, that's not cheap. And in fact, for legacy retailers, a lot of the money, it's not profitable for them to sell online. It's much more profitable than the store. And part of the reason is the returns. And the returns started because in the beginning, people didn't understand online shopping and they were scared of doing it. So to lessen that fear, they gave free returns. But returns is a very big problem. And so now the idea is to try to get it right the first time. Use the data, use the algorithms, use better information. So when people are ordering, they get their right size. I mean, why do you have so many returns? Because people order three different sizes. They're not sure what they are. Or maybe they're not sure what they want. But to the degree we can personalize the shopping experience, you can hopefully in the future reduce returns.
Not entirely separate. We've had a text in asking what role you see things like virtual reality and augmented reality playing in the way we shop. Surely that could be an answer.
Yeah, and there's a lot of disagreement on this. So some people think virtual reality is here already, the technology is here, and that is the future. That if you think about shopping, how much has gone to the phone, and people are okay shopping off the phone. Can you imagine what the shopping experience would be if you could do it virtually in 3D? You would get so some people really believe in the future of virtual reality. Other people think that doesn't make any sense. People are not going to shop like that. That's, you know, the technology. So there's disagreement on that. There's a lot on augmented reality too, which is a different idea.
Yeah, I mean, I was looking at Microsoft at the HoloLens, which is mixed reality, but it's not wired. So you could wander around a store,
right. Put
it on when you look at products you want, and it'll give you lots of information about it, when it becomes interactive, then you can actually, you don't need staff, you can just do it all yourself.
So that's part of it, but that's what I mean by augmented reality. Mm. I agree. Some people think that has more future, because what you want is the mix, the real physical, and then what you need to go into virtual. So like one of the places they see augmented reality is like in furniture, so that you can kind of picture how the sofa will look in your living room, and people can't do that without some help, so that's a positive.
I follow you on Twitter, and you have you sound great on radio. No surprises, because you have your own podcast and radio show, don't you? And one of the recent episodes, you interviewed a guy called, I think it's John Wilson, who wrote a book about multicultural marketing. And for a place like Dubai, which is this cultural melting pot, I thought that was interesting and relevant. What did you learn about multicultural marketing, and how could you apply it here?
Yeah, he was a great guest. So the idea is to think through different cultures and how you would market, and then be very sensitive to that. I think a lot of what's going on in general in marketing and in branding, and you can see it now in the U.S. news, like with Facebook or what, something like that. You, as a retailer, you're not just selling product anymore. You have to be sensitive to the whole customer experience, and that involves diversity, sensitivity or cultural sensitivity and social responsibility. A lot of the people, I don't know about here, but in the U.S., they have more faith sometimes in business taking care of products than they do in politicians taking care of problems.
You mentioned a few minutes ago smart retailers, and you said that there are smart retailers that really get it right. Can you name some of those?
The Omni experience?
Some of what you would call smart retailers.
Well, I mean, one of the things is, like, if you look at some of the new players, like a Warby, now they're way smaller, and I understand they're not as big, but they came in from online, so they came in understanding it. The problem with some of the legacy retailers, and they're smart, they know how to do logistics, they know how to do operations, they know the perishability, all of that stuff you were talking about, but what they don't know is online. They don't understand how all of this works, and in some sense, their experience is almost blinding them, because they don't understand how new people think about shopping. Shopping is 24/7. It's through my phone. That's just not the way shopping used to be.
Very quickly, a few SMSs that we've got in. Hatim writes in, we have to do rapid fire. What do you suggest for retailers? Should you have a couple of flagship stores in just a couple of shopping malls, or blanket across multiple shopping malls, multiple destinations?
Yeah, well, it depends. So people are doing different things. You're seeing a lot of the very big brands that want to really build a branding experience invest in state-of-the-art flagship stores. That is what you're seeing on some of the big places where tourists come, and you're doing a lot of branding. Then you're seeing a retailer like Target that's opening up a lot of very small footprint stores in urban centers and in college campuses for the quick run in and that kind of stuff. But they're taking what used to be big boxes and narrowing down to smart assortments in just the right place and just in time.
We're going to have to leave it there. We're out of time. Fascinating discussion. Thank you so much indeed for joining us today. Barbara Kahn is Professor of Marketing at the Wharton School. Appreciate you joining us.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for the conversation.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.